Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, March 7th. I'm Ray Graff. It's all aboard for today's program as we have three experts in the studio to talk about trains at Model Train Collecting. Together, Jeff Stedge, Doug Bafaro, and John Basile have more than 75 years of experience buying and selling trains. And they did so well the first time they threatened to come back, and by golly, they came back. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. If you want to talk real trains or model trains or anything in between, I suppose, if there is anything in between, give us a call, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Trains and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program all about trains, and we have three experts in the studio to keep everything on the rails. First up is Jeff Stedge. He is an avid collector of Lionel and other O-gauge trains, particularly American and German trains from the early 20th century. He is also well-versed in local railroad history, and this area is steeped in history of railroads, particularly the New York Central Line. And Jeff is a co-promoter of the Albany Train Show, which is the longest-running train show in the Capital District. Doug Bafaro also collects Lionel and other O-gauge trains. He has 30 years of collecting and model railroad experience. His knowledge of local railroad history focuses on the Delaware and Hudson lines, as well as the New York Central. Doug is also a co-promoter of the Albany Train Show. And John Basile has more than 50 years of collecting experience. He specializes in standard and wide-gauge trains from the early 20th century. He's also well-versed in early short-line railroads in the Capital District and the Adirondacks. Our number to call, if you have a train question, is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Jeff, Doug, John, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Ray. Oh,
glad to be here.
You guys did a great job the first time.
Yeah, thank you.
We love being here. Talking about trains.
And yep. It was right before you had a train show. It was when November you were on?
The week before Thanksgiving.
How did that go?
It went very well. We always have a good turnout. Our vendors are fantastic. It's always been a good show.
And another one coming up?
Yep, very shortly, this Saturday.
And where is that?
We're at the Polish Community Center on the Washington Avenue Extension in Albany.
Okay, so that's on Saturday and Sunday?
It'll be Saturday only. We'll be operating from 9 to 3, and $5 at the door, but children are free. Yeah, I know. I just realized.
Well,
that
you know,
I said
the if I went there, would I see trains in action, or would I just see
yes.
a bunch of people standing around at
no.
kiosks?
We have three layouts: one in O gauge, one in HO, and one in N. So it's fairly diversified.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jeff Stedge, Doug Bavaro. I'm going to call you Bavaro because the Giants had a great tight end.
Mark Bavaro.
And it's going to drive me crazy. Bafaro.
The worst part is my middle name is Mark.
Okay, so if I call you Mark Bavaro, it'll be all right.
Yeah, it's okay.
John Basile also here. We talk trains. And before we get going with what really you guys are into, and that's the model trains, let's talk a little bit about the history of the real trains here in this area. Mm. And this is where it almost exactly where it began.
Well, the funny thing was is my initial interest was in model trains, but has developed into an interest in local train history, even down to what types of locomotives were built, the small railroads that developed that fed the main lines and how they've disappeared over the years. You see now a lot of those rails are all being torn up and turned into bike trails and whatnot, but those were all operating railroads at one time.
And the first railroad that was in operation around here goes back how far?
Well, it'd be the
1826.
1826.
Which was actually the second railroad to be chartered in the United States.
And that ran from Schenectady to Albany?
That is correct. Yep.
I think I remember seeing a historical marker down somewhere by the State Ed building, right?
That is correct, yep.
Amazing. And what sort of... I assume it was steam, right? Locomotion?
It was steam. It was actually the DeWitt Clinton was the name of the engine.
Mm-hmm.
And it ran for, I think, 7 miles between Schenectady and Albany. But it was the second charter. The first charter was a small mining company in Massachusetts. But very quickly, with and of course the legislature did not really want the trains around
so close to the Capitol.
Well, so close to the canal where a lot of them had financial interests.
Oh, very interesting.
And so it wasn't until they could figure out a way to make money off of the trains, off of the railroad, that eventually that's how that all changed, and the railroads became prevalent in this area. And of course, Erastus Corning, everybody thinks of Cornelius Vanderbilt as the one to really consolidate all of the small rail lines into the New York Central, but that was actually Erastus Corning, who put 9 small short line railroads together, and it was the beginning of the New York Central.
Very interesting. And so the initial locomotives, the engines, do we have the originals or facsimiles thereof still around somewhere that we can look at?
John, do you have it in your garage?
Oh, I don't have it in the garage, but right here in front of me is an example of what would have been a turn of the 20th century model locomotive, and it looks like kind of like a locomotive of that period. And I, of course, collect early toy trains. This is an electric train, and it was made between 1905 and 1910 by the Carlisle and Finch Company. Now, the Carlisle and Finch Company was the first ones to manufacture regularly electric trains in the United States starting in 1895. Before, you know, the famous Lionel or American Flyer trains.
Right.
And other manufacturers as well. Interestingly, it's kind of a crude tin and wood product, and they didn't advance as well as companies like Lionel. So by the turn, but when World War I came along, the Carlisle and Finch Company stopped making these trains, but they're still in business today.
Really?
Serving the marine market of signal lights, running lights, and things like that for ships and barges all over the world. And they're in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Very, very interesting. But that doesn't look exactly like we're talking about at the very advent of trains in the 1820s, right?
No.
No. Now, this is about 1890s, that kind of
time. I'm not sure if does the DeWitt Clinton exist anywhere?
I think there's a model of it somewhere.
And that was wood-fired?
Yeah, the very first ones they used wood.
Mm. Yep. And eventually they used coal, but they were early on they were wood. So there was the DeWitt Clinton, there was the Best Friend of Charleston, which was down in Charleston.
The John Bull.
The John Bull, which was Baltimore and Ohio. So,
and how wide were the rails in the original days? In other words, the span between the two rails.
They're basically the same as they are today, 4 foot, 8.5 inches, which
That's
is
all?
A standard gauge. Yeah. Which is standard gauge, and it's used in a good part of the world, of course.
And do you know why it's that wide?
Why?
I will tell you.
All right.
It turns out that rail width goes all the way back to the Roman Empire.
Huh?
Because they had trains back in the Roman
Empire.
No, they
did not.
I don't know if anybody's aware of that. No, it was actually the width of the wagon wheel axle. And it just, as they moved forward, and there were these ruts that had developed in the roads, and so when they came up with how wide the rails should be for railroads, they were approximately the same width as you would see for the ruts from any horse-drawn carriage up until that time.
But even modern trains, they haven't done any scientific research that's saying, well, a wider base here might give us more stability, or, I mean, they're all still at 4 feet, 8 inches?
No, they're not all. There are other gauges in the world, and some are a meter wide. One of the standard small are what we call narrow gauges in the United States, and if you go out to Colorado, you can still see them running, is a 3 foot gauge.
Why would there be an advantage to that?
Well, they have narrower or tighter turning radiuses and so going around mountains, going into mines and things like that.
Because this was for logging and mining. That's why you would have a narrow gauge railroad.
And there were actually some narrow gauge in this area. Matter of fact, there was one known pretty well in the Hudson area.
Oh, really?
They had a narrow gauge railroad for the same reason that it was back in there for logging and whatnot. And a narrow gauge, like you said, is for short corners and tight areas.
We are talking trains today, both real and toy, with Jeff Stedge, Doug Buffaro. Darn it. You know, the first show we did, I got it right every time.
It's a real easy name.
Now I can't get it right. Doug Buffaro and John Basile. Let's take a call or two, and then we'll take our first break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ryan in Malta. Ryan, you're on.
Hi, guys. I'm looking at trying to put a train around my tree. Originally, I got wrapped up in the history of the Hiawatha line and didn't realize that my Lionel, it's going to be way too wide to make the circle because the cars are too long. So I have an old house up here in Malta. The back corner of the property used to have part of the Albany Traction Company go through.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that'd be fun to put a little trolley around the tree. Having a hard time finding the right color scheme to put on some of the trolleys that are available out there to make it look at least slightly accurate.
Huh.
Got any tips?
Well, here's the good news.
Go ahead.
All of the pictures from that era, any photographs that exist, are all black and white. So you can put whatever colors you like.
That is
on
not
there.
Helpful.
Oh,
again.
I'm sorry.
Jeepers creepers.
And just tell people that I got it right.
Exactly.
And
who's
what do they know, right?
Well, it was a long time ago.
Oh, it was a long time ago. No, who's going to know? But there are a number of different resources that you can use. There's a ton of books out there on traction companies throughout the United States, including in this area.
Well, I have a number in my collection, but the problem is you can get the right lettering of the trolley, but you cannot get the color. You can only guess. And
there must be something written down somewhere.
Well, I think there are. If you look at enough literature, if you can find the production literature, then you'll find the colors. But it's hard to do.
The first caller today stumped the group.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, I think you use whatever colors you want. It's black and white photography. But I think what John is saying is that, Ryan, that what you could do is if you get close enough, in other words, if it's a blue or a red or a yellow, I think that's going to be close enough for you to be able to prototypically model a traction.
Yeah, can use shading that where one color is obviously darker than the other from the pictures.
Right.
Sure.
Well, there are trolley museums here in the country. And
down in Connecticut has a very good one.
Correct.
Yes, and there's one up in Maine in Kennebunkport.
Oh.
They have, you know, real examples, whether or not, I don't probably think they probably have an example for the local ones. But
all right.
I'm particularly interested in the interurban lines. The one that used to run in front of my house was the Hudson Valley Railroad.
Mm.
Which ran from Waterford all the way up to Warrensburg, through Mechanicville and up through Saratoga Springs, and Glens Falls.
Well, we have to take a quick break here, gentlemen. We have, I'm going to say his name first so I get it right. Doug Buffaro is here, John Basile, and Jeff Stedge. We talk trains and model trains on the program today. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. That number is 800-348-2551's Trains Today at Model Trains with John Basile, Doug Buffaro, and Jeff Stedge. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Got three emails here, boys, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one came in from Rich. We'll just call him Rich, even though he's the guy who does the bird show. Can you tell us about the White Elephant Railroad in Athens, Greene County? Why are you laughing? No?
Wow, okay.
No.
That's the second question we've seen. You know, you guys, I don't
we're,
know.
We're not doing very well, are we?
Are you out having cocktails before the show? Come on, let's step it up.
White Elephant.
The White Elephant was a small, short-line railroad that ran locally along the Hudson. Now, back in the day, and I'm not exactly sure when the years of operation of that were, but there were literally hundreds of short line operated railroads for various reasons, for commuter purposes, for freight purposes, for mining purposes. And so This could be Rich trying to trick us.
Why?
Why did they exist?
No. Why would Rich want to try to trick you?
I don't know.
All right. So that's another one. All right. So let's go. Sorry about that, Rich. Let's go to Don's question. Don says, I have a set of New York Central Conductor's cufflinks and shirt studs. They're circa 1935 to 40. Are they worth anything?
You know, you would think that they would be worth a ton of money. Oddly enough, they are
pretty common.
Well, it's, you know, what you run into is there's not a lot of desirability for them. They are kind of common. There was tons of them out there. We do run across them. We run across the hats. We run across the badges on the hats. And then we run across buttons and epaulets and cufflinks and whatnot.
Yeah.
If they're in great shape, everything is always about condition. I would say you're probably looking at some number of about $25 for the set.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, I assume there are a lot of people who like to, you know, have a couple of drinks and then dress up like a conductor, right?
You don't need to bring that up on this show.
Fine. No. All right. This one's from Glenn. I have an Aristocrat G-Scale EMD E8 diesel locomotive. It has a factory installed speaker and connectors for a sound system. What sound system would work on this? And that's from Glenn in Livingston. It's a G-Scale Aristocrat EMD E8 diesel locomotive, a factory-installed speaker and connectors for a sound system.
Well, Aristocrat, has their own sound system that they would sell as an aftermarket add-on.
I see.
But there are a number of different. QSI was a company that made a lot of the early sound systems for Lionel and for MTH and K-Line.
Yeah.
So there are third-party aftermarket stuff that you can buy. I would imagine any one of them would work, but I know that Aristocrat actually has their own.
Okay. Our number here is 800-348-2551. The Big Train Show is this weekend. It's Saturday at the Polish-American Community Center in Albany, right over on Washington Ave Extension.
Yes.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jeff Stedge, Doug Bafaro, and John Basile are here. And let's go back to those phones. Debbie in Sheffield. Hello, Debbie. Oh, you got to turn that radio down, Debbie. Oh, Debbie, you're listening on the radio. Turn the radio down, Debbie.
Wheels came off.
There's a little slight delay. I'm going to give her a chance. Okay, here she is. All right, now I hear myself. Hello, Debbie. Yeah. Debbie passed on while she was waiting. All right, let's go to Larry and Ravina. Larry.
Hi. I've got a couple of rail history events coming up that you guys might be interested in.
All right. Go.
Okay, one of them is going to be this Saturday night at the Boyceville Inn. Photo historian Gene Downer is going to be doing a presentation on 50 years ago along the Catskill Mountain branch of the old New York Central.
Oh, wow.
All the way from Kingston to Oneonta.
Hmm.
That really sounds great.
That actually could be interesting.
That's going to be a fundraiser for the UND Railway Revitalization Corporation. They'll have a buffet dinner to get everyone started, and then Gene will put on the presentation, and it's going to be starting at 6 o'clock.
All right,
and it's $18 at the door.
Okay, don't do prices, Larry. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. We go over to Jim in Matamoras, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on.
I've got artificial snow, the Christmas tree stuff sprayed on my 1940s Lionel engine. I was wondering if you got any ideas on how to get it off.
How awesome is that?
Soap and water. My son did that to my entire layout. When he was little, it took the spray snow and coated the entire. It took me 3 months to get it cleaned
up. But you can
up.
Get it off.
It comes off. Soap and water.
You can also use a product. You can try a product called Goo Gone.
Goo Gone. Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
Goo Gone?
Yeah. Try not to drink it.
Not Goo Gone. Goo Gone. Right. That's the stuff, Jim. All right. Thanks a lot for the call. It's Trains today on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. And again, if you're on hold, listen on your phone. because there's about to, you know, by the time our signal goes through the delay and then through the digital chain and then it gets to you, it's like 20 seconds. Poor Debbie waited for all those minutes, and then she wasn't listening, and then she couldn't be on the show. And, you know, it's sad, and we'd love to have Debbie on the show. Pablo and Athol. Pablo, you're on.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hi,
hello.
How are you, Pablo?
Yeah, I'm good. I just had a little story. In 1971, I graduated from an alternative school called the Warehouse Cooperative School, and it was in Watertown. And we had a fundraiser, a 24-hour auction, which was at the Institute of Contemporary Arts building along the Charles River across from WBZ. And our big item to end the auction was a caboose.
Oh.
And we had it transported from Vermont. And the story I got, and it was one of two cabooses that were made in this size. And they were smaller. And I think they were for a smaller size track. I don't know what that means, but anyways, I just thought I'd
tell
that story.
Was this a real caboose, I assume? And
yeah,
how many wheels did it have?
Oh, you know, I can't remember. We actually slept in it overnight.
Neato.
For how many weeks?
Just for a couple of days.
Oh,
that's great.
Actually, when it came down through Cambridge, when they got into Cambridge, they had to, like, they almost knocked out some wires and stuff.
Nice. Oh. What you're saying about it being for a smaller railroad, that kind of goes back to what we were just talking about with narrow gauge trains. So it sounds like this very possibly was part of a narrow gauge railroad.
Interesting.
A small narrow gauge railroad because, yeah, as you mentioned, it's smaller.
Or it could very well have all been a caboose that they used to call a bobber, right, which was like half the size of a normal caboose and was just, and again, was just made for short lines and whatnot.
Well, Pablo, thanks for the call. Now, what is the actual purpose of a caboose, like on a real railroad?
Well, originally, it was for the train crew.
To sleep?
They slept in it, but they also watched the train. They could see from the caboose, they could see forward, and they could watch for what were known as hot boxes. Back in the days when the bearings would get hot and sometimes catch fire or smoke.
Yeah.
And then they'd have to re-grease the boxes, stop the train. That was a big problem for many decades. In the early days, they didn't have a good braking system, so you had to manually brake the parts of the train. So they walked along the tops of the boxcars, for example, and manually cranked the brakes.
I think I've seen when driving out in the Midwest, trains that had engines at both ends. Mm-hmm. Is that common?
Yes.
One would push and one would pull?
That's right, particularly in the mountainous regions.
Yeah.
So to get a heavy train over a mountain, they sometimes even put them in the middle, a locomotive in the middle of the train as well.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. We talked trains today with Jeff Stedge, Doug Bafaro, and John Pazil, and they are doing the train show at the Polish Center in Albany on Saturday. You guys have a website for that, by the way?
We do. It is Albany Train Show. Very difficult to remember. AlbanyTrainShow.com, and all of the information is there. There's contact information, and it will tell you about admission and where the show is, and it will give you directions to the show as well.
Fun, fun, fun. Our number here is 800-348-2551, and let's go to Mary in Grahamsville, New York. Mary.
Yes, my grandfather worked on the Lackawanna Railroad. He was a conductor. It went from Hoboken to Scranton, Pennsylvania. Whatever happened to that? Did they merge with something else or just fold?
Well, the Lackawanna merged with the Erie, and it became the Erie Lackawanna. And then I think in the long term,
it's sort of CSX, didn't it?
It's part of either CFX or
Norfolk Southern.
Maybe Norfolk Southern now. All these, you know, smaller firms, well, actually they were big at the time, got swallowed up as time has gone on. And so you have very few railroads here in the East. But it's still there. Some of the tracks are still in use.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
But it doesn't work anymore. Did that go to Port Jervis?
Yes.
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 Okay, because when I was a kid, we used to get the train from Jersey City to Port Jervis, and that was the Erie.
Yes.
But it didn't say anything about Lackawanna on it. But it was merged with the Lackawanna?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Now, the mysterious Debbie in Sheffield. Let's see if she's actually here this time. Debbie, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, yes, Debbie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Anyway, I just wanted to ask about railroad maintenance and so forth. My grandfather invented the machines that grind the rails and clean the ballast. And it was called the Spino Railroad Ballast Cleaning Company. And he lived in Ithaca, New York, and they did a company was in Syracuse, New York, for many years, and they sold it, I think, in the late 70s. And I think they still did the same thing. I don't know what they, of course, advanced a lot of the machines that do the same, you know, accomplish the same job. So I was wondering why they don't talk more about that sometimes when they we have railroad shows on the radio.
What do you think, gentlemen?
Well, I think the maintenance, a lot of people look at the glory of running a train, you know, the engineers and the conductors and whatnot, and they forget about the guys that are out there maintaining the tracks, replacing the ties. And yes, the technology
has improved.
He invented
the machines that do it, too. I mean,
oh, that's cool.
And this wow. And his name was Frank Spino, S-P-E-N-O. I don't know if you call, it was called Spino Railroad Ballast Cleaning Company.
Huh.
And
yeah,
you
back
never
in
heard
the,
of it?
We did not, but there were a lot of small regional firms who did exactly
well,
that.
Well, their business is all over the world, Australia, everywhere. Well,
and they cleaned bells.
The ballast.
Oh, the ballast. Okay, gotcha.
The ballast and the railroad tracks, they grind the rails. So the Spino Railroad Ballast Cleaning, and it also did, later on, they invented the machines that grind the rails.
Well, I'll tell you what.
We've got to look that up and on Google and see what we can learn about it.
Yes, and so next time we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll do a little,
okay,
little bit of research on that, and we'll talk a little bit.
Debbie,
because what could you do without that?
Nothing.
You got a point. Debbie, thanks
okay
a lot for the call, and we appreciate your second attempt here. The number is 800-348-2551. Speaking of rails, remember when it was so cold out in the Midwest? It was cold here, too, but it was frigid in the Midwest. There was a great picture, I think there might have been video, of the rails in Chicago where they were actually setting fires to warm them up. Did
mm-hmm
you see that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why would you have to do that?
We'll put them back into shape.
Well, the real purpose is to melt the ice and stuff to build up on the switch points.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to have a small railroad at a power plant, and we used it to keep the rails warm. And, of course, the coal cars
yeah
would freeze up, and to dump them in the rotary dumper, we had to put the heat right on the tracks. And it went up right into the rail cars.
So interesting. Of course, they don't use coal anymore, I assume, in Chicago. They have to be electric.
I think there's still a fair amount of coal that's used there in the region, in Illinois.
Hmm. I'll be darned. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Doug Bafaro, John Bazile, and Jeff Stedge here. We talk trains and model trains. And let's see who's been waiting longest. Looks like Rich in Saugerties. Rich.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
Hey.
What do you know about the Sturbridge Lion? I always thought that was the first locomotive. They used it in Rosendale.
Yep. The problem with that is it is, in a sense, but they tested it and never used it in with the Delaware and Hudson Canal Corporation because they were going to use.
I don't know. I read somewhere that actually the boiler sat in Rosendale on the side of the road up until like the 60s.
I've read the same
thing. Never heard that?
Yes. I've read the same thing. I didn't know it was that late, 1960s, but there were four of them that were purchased by the Delaware and Hudson Canal Corporation.
Right.
And I think you'll find a replica over in Honesdale that's in a museum, but it's not an original. And didn't have the original boiler.
So this was a locomotive they tested but never put into service?
Never put in service. Because they already were using a steam-powered incline railway. And what they used is they actually had long ropes and then later cables to pull the loaded coal cars up inclines. And the early locomotive could not have handled those inclines.
Oh.
And so they tested it and never used it after they tested it.
Interesting. Thanks for the info.
Okay, you didn't stump us, Rich.
Well, yeah, good job, Rich. And, you guys are doing pretty good after the initial stumbles out of the gate.
Initial shock, yeah.
Jeff
yeah.
Stedge, Doug Bavaro, and John Bazile are here. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Trains today. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Trains today with Doug Bafaro, John Bazile, and Jeff Stedge. Our number is 800-348-2551. The big train show coming up at the Polis Center on Saturday. What time does that start, Doug?
It's 9 to 3 Saturday.
Okay. And the website, Jeff?
AlbanyTrainShow.com.
Fair enough.
Right. With a www.
Thank you for that. Okay. We have three emails, and then we'll get back to the phones on the home stretch. This one is from Tris. Not able to call in, but we have a potbelly wood stove from the New Paltz train station. If there is a nonprofit that might be interested in giving this a home, please contact me and we have the contact information. You'd have to pick it up. A potbelly wood stove from the New Paltz train station. Yeah?
Yeah. Actually, it's very cool. They would use those in the caboose.
Oh, yeah? This one is from Tony. And Tony says, when I was very young, in 1957 or 58, my mother took my brother and I from our home in Middletown, New York, to Buffalo through Binghamton. I think the Binghamton to Buffalo train was called the Phoebe Snow, and for a four-year-old kid, was the most exciting trip imaginable. Really, Phoebe Snow?
Yes. The first time I ever heard about that, I thought, wow, they named a train after a rock singer. But
it was the other way around.
It was the other way around.
Amazing.
Yes.
There's a great book that I have just about the Phoebe Snow.
Yeah? Was there a Carly Simon Express as well?
That came much later, yes.
All right, well.
We're looking for it.
Do you know anything about this Phoebe Snow train? You guys have any?
I don't have any information other than I have a book just about the Phoebe Snow.
Well, that was Erie Lackawanna.
Yeah.
So John has a book, so that's our answer to that one.
Well, but you can find it on eBay. Or you could Google it.
If you search Phoebe Snow, I'm sure that's the first thing that's going to come up.
Well, you'll find all kinds of information. You search it on Google.
Okay, this one is from John. Yeah. John writes, can you talk about the pros and cons of running American Flyer on DC and if it works with no modifications? Now, there's a model train question.
Actually, yeah, there was certain models where you could run American Flyer in both AC or DC. DC actually is a little better to not even so much for the locomotives, but for the different accessories that they made.
Yeah,
they operate better with DC as opposed to AC.
So you would need a transformer anyway if you were running AC, right? Or the other way around?
You need a transformer for either one.
Really?
You have transformers that'll have a DC output, and there are transformers with AC output.
But your wall socket is AC. Why would you need a transformer for that?
The transformer creates the power, changes it from AC to DC. Actually, your AC and DC transformers do just that, convert that. Not only from what you plug in is 110 volt, and what you're operating at is 12 to 16 volt.
So it's a step down. I got you.
Yes.
Our number is 800-348-2551. And let's see here. Looks like John in Sandusfield is next. John.
Hello. You were talking about the first railroad between Albany and Schenectady The train that ran on that road was the DeWitt Clinton.
That is
and,
correct.
Talking about thrilling trips for kids, whenever my parents took us into Grand Central Station, which was an unbelievably thrilling sight for a kid, there was one of the balconies on one end of the station that had the DeWitt Clinton. It was either the train itself or a full-size replica, and it made a great display. Just had two carriages on the end of it, but I can tell you Grand Central Station was the place I most loved to be then.
You guys remember that?
I don't. I used to go in and out of Grand Central.
Well, that was
every
in
day.
1931.
Well, you that's a little before my time.
Definitely before my time.
Right.
Now, John, you didn't ride on the original DeWitt Clinton, did you?
No, but
just
I was
checking.
6 years old when I got the thrill of Grand Central Station.
Oh, that is great, John.
And that was certainly its heyday, John. I mean, if to be down in Grand Central Station in 1931, that was the peak of the peak of the peak.
Yeah, and we had to see that train, too, sitting on the balcony.
Yeah.
So cool.
Wonder what happened to it.
Yeah, that's a great question.
I don't know. I suppose it's in a museum somewhere. Yeah, I mean, it was a beautiful restoration in great shape.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That should be a good question to throw out there. Does anybody out there know where the DeWitt Clinton is?
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll bet you somebody will know. Hey, John, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551.
Good story, John.
Calvin in Woodstock. Calvin, you're on.
Hi. Well, I have an HO set Revell. It was probably purchased in the mid-50s. It's in reasonable shape. Are any of your vendors interested, can you guess what it might be worth? It has seven cars and two locomotives and a caboose.
Well, I can guess, but it would be a bad guess.
I mean, it's all about condition, right? But you guys can have a general idea, right?
Yeah.
And again, condition is everything. Revell didn't make HO trains for a very long period of time. We're out there for a few years.
So that's probably makes them worth more,
There's a rarity to it. And again,
Do you have the boxes for that?
Are they in the original boxes?
I have the original box. It's all kind of been, it's suffering storage fatigue.
Yeah.
There's a cleaner car. And as I look inside on the ballast, there's a little bit of rust. So I guess there's been some moisture involved, but
never a good thing. Trains and moisture don't mix well.
Oh yeah. But the locomotive looks good. There's one locomotive that's heavy and the other one's empty. And there's a circular track with a switch and a crossing, but just the train with the seven cars, including a caboose.
We do have the show. On Saturday.
Right.
And will there be people who appraise that sort of thing at the show?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
We do have the show.
Are you then suggesting that it might be worth my drive?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I mean, there are train shows all over the place, but this one is coming
it's
up.
Close.
And this is something that happens regularly at these shows, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, good luck, Calvin. That sounds like an interesting piece. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. We talk trains today. Let's go over to Bob in Greene County. Bob.
Good afternoon. I am here to unstump you.
Terrific.
Oh, the white elephant. Look at you. Okay.
The white elephant was created by Daniel Drew, who was called a robber baron, but he also could be called a con man. He swindled John Jacob Astor's brother on a cattle purchase by feeding the cattle salt before they were weighed, so they sucked up a lot more water and weighed a lot more than...
That's not a swindle. That's a good idea.
But in terms of the Saratoga and Hudson River Railroad, which was the white elephant, Daniel Drew had a line of steamboats that ran out of New York, and he didn't want to run them all the way up to Albany, because in the wintertime there'd be delays and there were a lot more shoals up near Albany.
Yeah.
So he had land that he contracted for in the in Athens, New York.
Right.
And what he did was he would run his steamboats up there. They would download their freight. He had a gigantic warehouse. The warehouse itself was like 600 feet long.
Yeah.
And then there was the passenger part of it. And this was in the 1860s. And so, of course, he was going against Vanderbilt. Mm. And until he got things straightened out with Vanderbilt, it wasn't going to fly very well with the New York Central for him to make money on his little line.
Ah.
But
so did this get ultimately absorbed into the New York Central?
No, ultimately the line was abandoned. It didn't run regularly for more than a couple of years in the late 1860s, and ultimately this gigantic freight depot that he had built burned down in the early 1870s. And at that point it was like not going, you know,
yeah,
right,
going toward this again, and so he walked basically away from it.
Oh, that's
But there's a great deal of coverage. I happen to be the editor of the Greene County Historical Journal, and I'm looking at a double edition that we did on Uncle Daniel's White Elephant.
Oh, so cool. Hey, well, you know, that's a great call, Bob. Thank you very much for checking in on the program. We learned something here today. Let's go to Anne in Suffield. Anne, you're on.
Hi. I have a fairly general question. When I was cleaning out my parents' house, I found a set of six large tumblers from the Pennsylvania Railroad. They're sort of Art Deco, red train with a skyline, a white skyline behind them. And I've tried to research them. I can't find anything about them. I didn't know if you have seen them or if you know anything about them.
Well, all of the railroads in their dining cars would have had their own sets of not only glasses but dinnerware as well, and they were very, you know, it was part of the whole status of the railroad to create these unique glassware with their own emblems on them. So, some of them are worth some money. Some of them are fairly common. One place. I'm trying to think of a good, you know, Google is always what I would do under the circumstances. But
I keep finding modern things, nothing that looks as old as this.
Yeah.
See, now to me, that's the first bell that goes off that says, oh, I might have something.
Right.
If it takes you 78 pages on Google to find it, you might have a little rarity there.
That's correct. And
so just keep digging.
There are vendors out there who do handle that kind of thing. They specialize in actual railroad memorabilia and dinnerware, specifically for railroads as well.
Well, Ann, thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551, Vox Pop Today, Trains at Model Trains with John Basile, Doug Bafaro, and Jeff Stedge. Let's see here. It looks like Emily in Shelburne. Emily, you're next.
Good afternoon. I had a question regarding a glue substitute for model builders. I used to use Ambroid glue, and that is no longer made, of course.
Yep.
And I have tried other glues that just don't compare, but maybe I just don't try the right one. So,
now, are you looking for something that smells like that? Are you a glue sniffer? Is that what you're saying?
You know, really, Jeff.
You know, it does have a special smell. There's no doubt about it. I'm holding a tube in my hand right now that I've owned for a long time. But it just has a great function, and what I like about it is that it is also somewhat flexible once it's dried, and so I just haven't found that in other glue, but maybe you guys have a suggestion.
I bet they do.
What are you gluing?
That's the key.
Well, not models. what I use it for is I will have a canoe that has canvas covering, a wood canvas canoe, and for as long as I've known canoes, the way that you would patch the canvas is taking a very thin piece of cotton material, like a an old pillowcase, and then you use the Amroy glue to glue that cotton material onto the small tear in the canvas of a canoe, and it just holds beautifully, and will stay on and act as a patch for years. And any other glue doesn't seem to do it as well.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. I've been working with canoes my whole life, and going back to some Old Town ones that we had to patch when I was in Boy Scouts many years ago, we always used something we called woven roving or canvas. But we actually used a varnish product back then. Now, more modern repairs that I've made, I've used a woven roving, and it's an epoxy type of stuff, and it works beautifully. And you paint it on, and then place the woven roving or canvas on, and then go over the top of that. And by the way, I bought mine most recently, and this was about 10 years ago, at a canoe shop. And it was here in Schenectady, but I can't remember the name of the place where it is. It was right off the Mohawk River.
Well, I'm sure if you search canoe shop. Well, yeah. Emily, thank you for that call. We appreciate it. Lawrence in the Hudson area. Lawrence, you're on.
Hello. Thank you, gentlemen. Ray, I know we don't have a lot of time. Don't let me get off track.
All right. No off fun. Track. Very good. Oh. Okay. Hey, all right.
I think you already derailed the conversation.
Go ahead.
A couple of questions about switch keys and date spikes. Any market or any interest or information?
Switch keys and gate spikes. What are switch keys? What are gate spikes? Somebody.
Well, switch keys were lock switches. Maintainers had them. Different departments in the railroad would have their own keys to open the old coaches and the passenger cars.
Right.
Date spikes were way back in the day. There were 2-3-inch spikes, and they'd have 2 digits. Yep. And they put them in their cross ties, 10, 15, 20, and that would be the date that the tie was installed.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so we only have about 40 seconds here.
Switch keys, there are collectors for those. I often look at them and see them. And they run, it depends on the railroad, if it's marked with the railroad.
Right.
That's the key item. Some are more valuable than others.
Right.
But some of them, I've seen it at $20 to $50 each.
Okay. And there's an organization called Latch Key and Lantern.
That's great.
And Latch Key and Lantern, these guys, their median age is 94. But those guys are very knowledgeable about that stuff, and there are collectors that. So look up Latch Key and Lantern.
Okay. Jeff, you're always taking shots, and so I appreciate that very much. It's great to have you guys back, and it's incredible. I mean, here we are, the second show. The first one, I was skeptical we'd get any calls. The second show, we got jammed up again. We'll have to have you guys back one more time.
All right. Just one more time.
And you'll fall flat on your face and we'll never see you again. Hey, the show is coming up Saturday, right?
Saturday.
Correct.
At 9 to 3, Polish Community Center.
And once again, the website?
AlbanyTrainShow.com.
Well, thanks to Jeff Stedge, Doug Bafaro, and John Bazile for being here. Support comes from Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, not cosmic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, laser and skin care since 1996. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch, 518-786-1700. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. And Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated for over 50 years, offering indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, organic fertilizer, and advice, HadleyGardenCenter.com. Once again, thanks to Jeff, Doug, and John for being here today. Thank you for listening and for all the great calls. And if you got left on the line, we will do this again. Thank you so much. Thanks to Zach, the engineer. Not that kind of engineer. That's right, Zach. Thanks to Dina Salzman and our producers, Jim Lavoulis. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Right now, stand by for news.